Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Strang Report podcast. I'm Stephen Strang. Today, I'm going to do a tribute to a very close friend who is a great man, someone you may not have heard of, but his influence is far-ranging, and we're going to talk about him. His name was Dennis Doyle, and in a couple of days, I'm going to his funeral, and we'll talk about that in a minute. It's a very personal podcast, very different than a lot I do, but I'll be writing an article about Dennis is my way to share my thoughts and also to pay a tribute to this great man, this great Christian, who is my friend. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
Welcome back, and I'm happy to be able to talk today to Megan Doyle, who's Dennis' widow, who has also become a very close friend. And I did a podcast with Dennis and Megan, I think a couple of times over the years, about their ministry up in the Twin Cities in Minnesota. It was called Hope for the City, and then later it was called Matter. And so you can look up those podcasts if you have an interest on the Charisma Podcast Network. And never did I dream that I would be doing this podcast. If you listen to my podcast, you know that I've paid tribute in recent months to Fred Price, to Carl Strader, to a few other, usually ministers, because that's kind of our market. But Dennis was a very, very strong Christian, but I knew him as a businessman because I was in a very small kind of invitation-only peer group that met for almost 20 years. And so I've been his friend that long. So, Megan, I appreciate that this is probably one of the most difficult weeks in your entire life, and I appreciate you taking time to talk to me on the phone and to record, your thoughts about Dennis. And also, I'm perfectly capable to talk about my feelings, but there's so much about Dennis that I barely knew about. I mean, he had so many successes and tributes, and he influenced so many people. I was looking at the beautiful website that the family put together. He was on the cover of magazines, and he got this honor and that honor, and he started all these ministries. So maybe we could start by how you met him, I guess early in his real estate career, and kind of walk us through his life.
Well, when I met him, he was he gave me his business card, which said Dennis Doyle, Vice President, Welsh Construction. You know, and he was young. He was 28. I was 24. And I'm like, oh, I'm so impressed. You're a vice president. You're so young. So we started dating. And a few months later, I just like dropped in at his office. And it was him and George Welsh and his secretary. And I said, no wonder you're the vice president. There's nobody else to be the vice president.
Well, he was a president, so he's vice president.
Yeah. So that was their humble beginnings of Welsh Construction. And eventually we got married, and simultaneously George agreed to sell Dennis the business. And this was a handshake deal. No attorneys, no contracts. He just told Dennis, build this into whatever you want, and in 5 years, I'll sell it to you. So at that time, Dennis owned like 17% of it, and he just used all the proceeds then to buy it from George. And so 5 years later, he owned it 100%. And he's gone through the years. He's taken on minority partners and then bought them out and employed hundreds and hundreds of people, and there are many, many businesses that got their start in commercial real estate by working for him. And he was a highly successful entrepreneur. Some people think they're entrepreneurs because they have good ideas, but you have to be able to put those ideas into practice and to hire the right people to make the vision happen. And that's the sign of a true entrepreneur. That can launch and manage and grow the business.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I didn't get to know Dennis until 2001. And by that time, he would have been late 40s, I guess. And so he'd been doing it for a few years. I just knew him initially as a lively part of our group with good ideas, and he would contribute. Nobody really talked about all of his accolades. You know, gradually, you know, over a period of months, I was able to, you know, get to know him. And then as we would have some of our meetings in the Twin City, I got to, you know, see some of the places that he owned. And I began to think, wow, you know, this guy's pretty successful. And but, you know, he was just so humble. And also a very strong Christian. This group that I mentioned, all strong Christians. They're kind of businessmen who wanted to encourage each other to kind of move to the next level, so to speak, or to navigate all the transitions of life. And over the years, as a group, a lot of the guys have had, you know, various kinds of transitions, some of them difficult. And, you know, I don't talk about this very often because everything's confidential and it's very quiet. It's not even really an organization. It's just a group of friends who get together and meet, and I'm not really here to talk about this, but I'm just thinking of my own getting to know Dennis, and then I began to understand how influential he was in the Twin Cities. Now, I live on the other side of the country in Florida, of course, but I found out he owned huge amounts of real estate, offices and warehouses, and they would do contracting of various kinds, and he'd buy and sell the buildings. He'd sell the buildings to people and then provide the services to be, I'm probably not saying this right, but to be kind of like the landlord, to take care of all the maintenance and collect the rent from the tenants. And, you know, I mean, he was just so creative
in
how everything kind of worked together. And I often wondered, why was this company named Welsh? Who was Welsh? Well, Mr. Welsh was probably deceased by then. And you know, Dennis was just so humble. He kept, you know, he kept the name. And, you know, later on, he started another company. He didn't even name it after himself. He called it Wildemere, am I saying that right? And
Wildemere.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I need to memorize this before I come up to the Twin Cities to a service. But, you know, he loved Jesus. He really did. He let his light shine before men. Early, a year or two after I met him, he had some kind of luncheon that was kind of like an evangelistic outreach of some kind, and I guess they invited different speakers in, and I was honored to have him ask me to speak and, you know, share something that would encourage the group, and I began to interact with some of the people who knew him, and he was greatly loved. I never knew anybody who didn't love Dennis. And he was certainly greatly loved in our group. But let's get back to all the things he did. I mean, he was inducted into the Real Estate Hall of Fame. He was given an honorary doctorate. You know all of those details better than I do.
Well, we were both given honorary doctorates together from the University of St. Thomas. It's a large Catholic university in Minnesota. And that was in 2008. And he was Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year in maybe 2007. And, you know, you have to go on the website to see all the articles. And what we didn't put on the website, just articles about the company, which, you know, could be boring business articles. We tried to just choose articles that focus more on him and his life achievements. And, you know, I really think his greatest achievement or our greatest achievement together would be the creation of Hope for the City. Where we've given away over $650 million of corporate surplus to the poor. We continue on feeding the poor in Minnesota and the United States. And we continue to furnish hospitals overseas, as well as provide technology centers in partnership with Microsoft to bring computer access to faraway places in Africa or Indonesia where a computer could not be afforded. And to succeed in today's world, you have to have computer skills. So if there's one thing separating the developing world from the Western world, it's technology. So the more we can help bridge that gap, better the whole world will be.
You know, let's go back. You said something. You just said it so nonchalantly. $650 million over probably about a 20-year history, because it seems to me that Hope for the City was just getting going, because sometimes when our group allowed us to, you know, talk about things that were going on in our lives and sometimes get input from the other guys, and he would often, you know, bring up Hope for the City and some of the different things. At different times, we got to tour some of the warehouses and see it. I remember that you would collect surplus things from General Mills and Target, which are both headquartered in the Twin Cities, and others, and, you know, things that could help people. But then you also got into, like, I'm going to call it medical equipment, where, like, if maybe a dentist upgraded all of his equipment and his dental chairs were a little bit worn from use, but they were perfectly good, you would ship them over to African places where things like that are almost non-existent, and they were very happy, you know, to get hand-me-downs. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was those kinds of things I remember, and I guess it kind of varied based on supply and demand, but then you gave away food. I watched, you even had a big refrigerator room where you could give away perishables, and then later you put things in boxes that were nutritious, because so many poor people, you know, even if they get free food, it's not really nutritious. It tends to be junk food. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, at one point, we were serving 80 nonprofits 4 times a week with food. And we were just the middle person. You know, these nonprofits, you know, we brought semis of food in and then dismantled them to give away to the 80 nonprofits that we served here. And they were really carefully selected just to make sure they weren't going to sell our food, that they truly had a giving program. And so that's who we were. We were the middleman. We were the ones who made the contact with the large companies. A small nonprofit couldn't call General Mills and get, you know, one time we got 35 semis of Yoplait, and we had to disperse
Yoplait
of it within...
yogurt?
Yeah, yogurt, yeah.
Doesn't that stuff spoil? How in the world did you give away 35 semis?
Well, we had to do it in 48 hours, and we did it. Just through our national network with the other larger nonprofits that we knew could handle it. And we gave a lot of it away in the Twin Cities. We probably gave 10 semis away in the Twin Cities and sent the other 25 to other states.
Wow.
So, yeah. You know, a
Dennis found a need. You know, there's Jesus says the poor you'll have with you always. I mean, there's no shortage of needs, not only in other countries, but in our own country. But Dennis seemed to have, maybe it was part of his entrepreneurial skill, that he'd see a need and figure out a way to do it. I know the warehouses he used were some of that your company or his company actually owned, and he was able to put it to good use and help people. And he helped so many people. And, you know, maybe his example, and one of the reasons I wanted to do a podcast like this is because, you know, most of the listeners, of course, will not have known Dennis as I did, although these things tended to be passed around, you know, among friends. But, you know, he came from just very average background, had enormous success, started as a vice president of a company of three, and, you know, but it was very successful by the time I met him, was actually starting this ministry. It was infinitely smaller back then. And in fact, I want to talk to you about some of the recent fundraising that you did. But, you know, you knew Dennis, of course, he was your husband. So you know the motivation. What really motivated him to start? And maybe how can other people be influenced by his example?
Well, we saw someone doing what we're doing in California, and they were two pastors, and they were sending American surplus to Indonesia, where they were from, and they were an unpopular people group. They were Chinese, and they were businessmen in Indonesia, and when they came here, they became pastors, so they would send this wonderful corporate surplus back to Indonesia and bless them. And they're mostly a Muslim community. And they were like very confused why these Christian pastors, Chinese pastors, Chinese Indonesian pastors who are now in America, were blessing them. And so it was a wonderful witness of God. And we saw their operation and where they were storing pallets in their church on pews. And we thought, oh, gosh, there's always unused warehouse space somewhere. We have warehouse space to put this stuff. And we know people who have stuff. And we think if we tell them what we're going to do, that we're going to give it to the poor, I think they give us their surplus. So that was the idea. We hired one guy. And when we found something, I started on the phones. And when we found something, we would rent a Hertz truck. We'd go pick it up and we'd go put it in an unused warehouse. And when we got enough, we would call all the people that we would write checks out to at the end of the year and said, would you, you know, like, you know, winter coats or winter boots or whatever it was that we happened to have. And they were like, yes, we'll take that. So that's really how we started. The first year we had three distributions and we gave away $1.8 million. And Dennis loves leverage. And so he really liked the fact that for $40,000, we could give away $1.8 million.
And so let's unpack this for people. So you kept your overhead low. You had only one employee. You had a few rental costs with the Hertz truck. And so $40,000, you were able to collect things that would have been unused or certainly not gone to the poor or maybe even trashed. And this all this stuff was worth $1.8 million. Boy, you talk about leverage. And also, it's I'm so impressed. You know, even though I've known Dennis for years, I didn't know about the Chinese pastors in California sending things to Indonesia. So he kind of was inspired by them, obviously. And I hope that people can be inspired by what Dennis has had because it, you know, he didn't stop there and do just $1.8 million. If so, if he'd done it for 20 years, you know, what does that add up to, you know, $30 to $40 million total? No, he kept growing and growing and growing it. And of course, when people find out about this, there's, you know, people like to cooperate. I'm sure many people cooperated with you and also ministries who need things or, you know, come and ask for things. So people could actually, you know, there's probably cities in the United States where nothing like this exists. But there's a need. It might be a different need. They wouldn't have Target and General Mills to give them Yoplait. How do you say Yoplait
yogurt? Yogurt.
But wouldn't there be kind of the equivalent all over the country?
No. It's amazing, but there isn't. And we would procure from all over the country. I mean, the Yoplait came from Georgia, not Minnesota.
Oh wow!
So yeah. It didn't really matter what part of the country. If we could get it to Minnesota before it's spoiled and distributed, and if not, then we would give it to a network that we've developed nationwide that we could trust, you know, would truly give it away to the poor.
So, but the point is that Dennis can be an example. That's really, other than just paying tribute to a man, one of the greatest men I have ever known, personally, up close and personal. I also believe that people can be inspired by what he did. And it kept growing and growing. And I know that you and Dennis were very generous, but this isn't just something that the Doyles did because other people came alongside you. And then somehow you connected with Gene Simmons of KISS. Could you tell me that story and what happened?
Well, Dennis and Quentin met Gene Simmons through friends in Beverly Hills, California, where he lives. And Dennis didn't start talking to Gene about music. He started to talk to him about his philanthropy and, you know, what does he do for the poor? And most people don't know, Gene Simmons is Jewish. Gene Simmons is an immigrant to this country at about age 7. He is a product of American schools and universities. He became a school teacher and taught school. And then he picked up a guitar, and the rest is history. But he doesn't drink, and he doesn't smoke, and he doesn't do drugs, and he never has. And that's his own personal integrity. But he learned how to play the rock and roll game really well. And so his reputation would be completely the opposite of who he was as a person. And Gene was impressed with that. Dennis wasn't impressed with his music. He was more impressed with his philanthropy. And Gene was buying food every day for this orphanage in Zimbabwe, who kind of had him wrapped around their finger because they said they can't buy fresh food because the men in the mountains will come down and steal it from them. And Dennis looked at him and said, "They're pulling your leg." He said, "I could feed them all for a year with one semi. Now you're free to put that money somewhere else to good work." And he's like, "Really? Really?" So that's what we did. And that's what started our relationship with him. And he loved the Hope for the City model. He performed at 3 of our galas. He gave us 2 fundraisers in Beverly Hills and 1 in New York. So Gene introduced us in successive years to Darius Rucker and the Eagles, who performed at our galas, and each of them sold themselves 3 times. So one performance became 4 performances. And the people who bought them at our fundraiser turned most of them into fundraisers for us and just, you know, had them come and play in their backyard or at their business or whatever. And so Gene has just helped us raise millions and millions and millions of dollars and just put his heart into it. And that's who Gene really is. Gene cares about the poor, and he has a very strong faith in God. We've really had email conversations going back and forth about Jewish commentators versus Christian commentators and how we think about things and how the poor will always be with us and how we're all supposed to always take care of the poor. Even the poor are supposed to help the poor. So that command from God does not stop anywhere. Everyone has to take care of everyone. So,
boy, that is so beautiful. And let's move on to, there are several things I want to come out, and one of them is that Hope for the City changed its name. Tell us the new name and why you picked it.
Well, the Next Generation wanted a new name, and it had to be one word in today's marketplace, and it had to explain everything we were doing locally and overseas. And so a marketing firm helped us, and we had the Next Generation in place, and we just let them run with it. And they chose Matter because we all matter, because we deal with Matter products, and everyone in the supply chain matters, and they all want to know who each other are. So the recipient wants to know who's donating, and those donating want to know who the recipient is, because they all matter. And so it's one word that we could use to describe the ministry and everything that we're doing. And so they chose Matter.
And now that Dennis is gone at age 68, which is way too young to leave, but the ministry is going to continue, and of course, the business that he built is continuing as well.
Yes, when he sold Welsh Companies, he left and started Wildermere Capital Management as a means, really, Steve, to manage our own real estate. So we manage about 6.5 million square feet, and we're also an investment, real estate investment. And so that's what we do. We buy and we sell and we manage. And it's just our own partners. So So that's the business that we have that we'll leave to our children. And, you know, we continue to grow it.
Well, that's beautiful. And matter will, of course, continue. And, you know, I hate to bring this up. It's so sad. But Dennis died of Alzheimer's, which is a terrible, terrible, terrible disease. And over the last, you know, in the early stages of Alzheimer's, you can kind of hide it. And it's progressive, of course. And I was able to be with Dennis up until really before COVID. And it's just an awful disease. Is there anything that you learned by going through Alzheimer's that you want to share with people? Or is there any legacy that Dennis leaves in that regard?
Well, I can tell you some personal experience of dealing with it. The grief is chronic and ongoing. It's not like someone has died and then the grief gets better as you go on. As you go on, the grief piles on top, new grief on top of old grief. And you have to constantly process it or you'll probably get sick. And at one point, I was begging the Lord to take the grief. It was just too much. And the Lord said no, because if he did, I would miss the pearls that he has for me along the way. And when I got to the end, my development as a human being would be dwarfed and there would be a dull emptiness. And I really needed to know that. That was like 6 years ago. I needed the encouragement of the pearls along the way. And I needed to know what the outcome was if I didn't do it. And so he told me everything I needed to know in that one prayer session with him.
Wow. And I didn't know you were going to share that. That is worth the podcast, just those last couple of minutes. So thank you for sharing it. And now Dennis is gone. In a few days, I'll be flying up for his funeral. I didn't love him, of course, like you did, but I considered him one of my very closest friends, and I just had to be there to process my own feelings. And I'll be writing an article that we'll put online. We'll be sharing this podcast. The podcast will probably be on for years, hopefully friends and families and different ones that are inspired, you know, even different ministries. You know, in fact, I've thought of several ministries I'm going to send the podcast to because I think they'll be inspired by Dennis's story. And as we wrap up this podcast, which went a little bit longer than normal because I think it's so important, Megan, I'd like to give you a last word about what you think Dennis's lasting legacy will be.
Well, generosity for sure. And his life was a life of someone who never gave up. Even at the end, he had to get to his last ounce of life before he would let go. And that's how he lived his whole life. He did everything 150%.
Wow. What a life. What a legacy. Dennis Doyle from Minnesota. I'm going to miss him. And for the listeners that listened this long, thank you for staying with us. I realize this is a little different podcast, but, you know, the Lord has given me this platform, and I try to follow the Spirit and how I use it, but I just felt that I needed to pay tribute to my very good friend, Dennis Doyle. Thank you for listening, and God bless you.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.